I can still see him. It's 6 o'clock straight up at WXYC Chapel Hill time once again, Sunday evening for Northern Hemisphere Live. I'm Bill Burton with Bob Oster, and what's your name again?
Jeff.
Just Jeff.
It's fine.
Okay. we'll take this out of. Yeah, ooh, I could do that. And today we're going to be talking with a little later on with Bob.
Bob. And
Bob.
There's a number of things to know about Bob or not know about Bob, including that Bob is at the very least the source of J.R. Bob Dobbs of the Church of the Subgenius. There's some question as to whether...
at least he's very close to this phenomenon.
Right, as to whether it is actually one and the same or whether he's an archetype or...
An archetype.
We hope to clear this up today.
Okay.
We live for the opportunity to clear this up.
And we'll be calling up Bob in a few minutes once we get a couple of other things out of the way. For one thing, obviously, the usual co-host with me, that is, Todd, is not here, and he'll be back in a couple of weeks to do the show. He couldn't be with us today, so we have value talking about.
And we feel like Bob may be a good person to have on in Todd's absence because Todd and Bob seem to have the same kind of momentum.
Momentum?
Mm-hmm. Well, in a verbal sense.
Oh, okay. And we'll be getting to that in a little while. I had quite a... Okay, well, we find out now if this works. Hi, so I see you on the air. Hi, you're on the air.
Weird talk shows, crazy groups every Sunday telling you what you think. Weird talk shows, crazy groups every Sunday telling you what you think.
If that guy would please put that on a cassette and mail it to Northern Hemisphere Live, WXYC, Box 51, Carolina Union, Chapel Hill, 27599. We would be eternally grateful.
And stick around, buddy. This show's for you.
Hi, XYC, you're on the air. Why don't we take a little musical break here with some producers for Bob stuff and get a hold of him?
Good idea. Sounds like a plan.
Okay, here we go.
Ooh.
Okay, I think that did it. You there, Bob?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, that was music from Bob's Media Ecology, released by Producers for Bob on DOV Entertainment Records, or CDs or so, and we've got Bob on the phone with us here. Introduce yourself, Bob. What do you do?
Well, I'm a mixed corporate media environment, and I've been chairman of the Secret Council of 10 since March 1988, and basically I orchestrate the environments that occupy the global theater.
The Secret Council of Ten?
The Secret Council
of Ten. Let's go into that, Bob.
What is the Secret Council
yes.
of Ten?
What is the Secret Council of Ten?
Well, it's modeled on the Council of Ten in Venice in the medieval period leading up to the Renaissance. And that was the secret big brother star chamber that the oligarchs in Italy used to maintain secret power.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been many occupants of that institution since then. But in the 20th century, it's sort of been set up with new entities since 1945. And I was groomed since I'm 70 this year. I've been groomed since my birth in 1922 to be at least a functioning staff member of it. And certain problems came up in the 60s, 70s due to the new technological electric environment that allowed us to... my faction to get into a position where I could take over and orchestrate the Secret Council in a more public mode. And so since I went public in the local radio station here, it's been a campaign and a public relations effort to have people understand how we had to do what we did before and why we're using a new technique called the Tetrad. So basically it's Orwell's Big Brother, but it's a lot more sophisticated than that which occurred in the 30s.
And you're really 70 years old?
Yes.
So, Bob... You're 70 years old. Does this mean you are a physical entity, an embodied agent?
Yes, because I've...
I mean, I could meet you on the street.
Yes, you could. The point is that, you know, we have a lot of advanced technologies in our institution, the Secret Council 10, so that it's very easy for us to have stopped the aging process. So that's why I'll be around for a long time, and if you meet me, I look like I'm maybe in my late 20s, early 30s.
Mm. So being 70 years old, how, even though you've managed to stop your body from aging,
yeah.
How is it that you've managed, basically, for lack of a better term, to stay hip? Most of the 70-year-old people I know can't listen to today's music, quote unquote, because it's annoying.
Well, I have a great involvement in the entertainment world because I institute many of the hit phenomena as a form of tetrad management. We have to understand the zeitgeist of each youth culture generation that comes along, and we have to market a certain image they need. And we have an ulterior motive in that, but we have to mirror their needs and wishes. And so I have to be marketing what I generally like and what I want the kids to be brainwashed by. So it's not hard for me to like that stuff, since actually the kids, this is in anthropology, kids in ancient tribes always manifested the rhythms of the new technological bias. And so if I'm working with the new technological environment, I have to adopt that bias to understand how they operate. So I naturally am flexible enough with my sensory apparatus to be aware of the new rhythms and to understand why the kids respond to them.
And how does this manifest itself in our current environment?
The management of that?
How does your ability to stay on top of this manifest itself with what's going on, say, in August of 1992 as opposed to, say, August of 1942?
Well, as I said, I'm pretty expert, like any artist, at manipulating my sensory environment so that I can handle any changes come up. And most of the time, for me, it's the medium is the message. The content doesn't affect me too much anymore, having seen so many changes over the last 50 years, that I don't really hear the youth culture. I just orchestrate certain entities to put out a certain frequency in image or sound. I don't listen to it very much, but it's not hard for me to understand what's happening since I kind of fund it.
So,
you see what I'm saying? I'm not involved in the content.
Okay.
What is your motivation, Bob? What is your, or to rephrase it, what is your goal? I mean, where are we going?
The ulterior motive.
Where are we going?
Well, if you guys have the chart from the CD memo to Prince Charles.
Yes. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. If you notice, it says for 1990 to 2020, homeopathic retrievals, lockdown, Bob Rule.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that lockdown, Bob Rule isn't some kind of fascistic or dictatorial agenda I'm doing. It's basically we've been through such amazing changes over the last 70 years, especially the last 40 years, that my job is to help people understand the changes they've gone through, not to implement any new changes, but to make that alchemical need in the public so that they can understand the changes they've gone through, and then they can have slack. The people today don't have the slack, don't have the understanding to engender the slack, to realize the wonderful situation we've got ourselves into at this point environmentally. So my agenda is to spread understanding.
That's great. And we're going to give you an opportunity to do that now, Bob, with a phone call here. If you hang on a second.
Just hang on a second.
Cut into our caller.
If we cut you off, we'll have to call you back. Hang on.
Okay.
Hello, XYC. You're on the air. Hello?
Me?
Yeah, you're on.
Wow. I finally got you. I'm on Franklin Street. I wanted to tell you that for some reason, when you walk around with a Walkman, you can barely hear it around here.
Do you have a question for Bob?
Yeah, I wanted to ask him, why do you think the streetlights are so messed up in this area?
In the Chapel Hill area?
Yeah, especially on Franklin and Columbia.
That's because you have a magazine called The Sun coming out of there.
Uh-huh.
You know that magazine?
Not really, I just got here.
Yeah, it's a propaganda organ for Viktor Frankl. I think the publisher is Cy Frank Alansky, something like that. But because he's energizing the concept of the sun, which is old nature, and the electric environments of the streetlights are the new sun, creating a 24-hour daylight situation, it screws up the ecological harmony of the technological environments there.
Uh-huh.
You know, so you've got to tell the editor there of the sun to change the title of the magazine, because to energize that kind of old concept will sort of create a disharmonious vibration with the streetlights.
Well, it definitely makes a big difference. I mean, if you've ever stood out there in that corner, it's a mess.
Yeah, it's like the Twin Peaks. You know, the flashing streetlights and Twin Peaks they use as a motif.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I got you there. But why do you think he would do that?
Twin Peaks or the sun?
No, but why would this guy do that?
Why did David Lynch do that? What was the point in
that? Of course, that was a documentary about me. You know that. The whole thing about Bob, right?
Right.
And the sign, clue of that is his logo, the flashing electric grid that has Lynch Frost Productions at the end.
Mm-hmm.
That was a reference to the electric environment, which is today a concretization of the mixed corporate media environment. So Bob, as a technological vampire, overtook Leland, and then at the end, what was his name, the hero? Dale. Dale Cooper, right?
Cooper, yeah.
Which was a satire on that UFO enthusiast, Bill Cooper. You've heard of him, right?
Sort of.
He was around showing the Kennedy film.
Oh, yeah.
Showing the chauffeur killing Kennedy,
mm-hmm.
which is bogus and not true. But the satire on that, because Dale Cooper, the character, gets involved with UFO research and encounters Bob. Because Bob is in touch with the X's, the people who are coming from Booties to communicate to us in the 90s, and they've been setting down the pattern in the crop circles, because that is within the natural environment, the solar system, and has been superseded by the electric environment, the idea that Bob, in Twin Peaks, takes over the anthropomorphic level is Lynch's, I won't say negative projection, but it is his understanding of the lockdown of Bob Rule at this point. So I think he knows a bit about the electric environment, and that's why he had the streetlights in there.
You get it, caller?
Yeah, but I'm still trying to get, what is his purpose to do this?
What is his purpose to do what?
To mess up the traffic on that one corner.
This other guy, the publisher.
The publisher. Yeah, why is the publisher of The Sun interested in messing up the traffic?
That one corner.
Yeah.
Does he know he's doing this? Is this deliberate?
He doesn't know he's doing it. That's what I'm pointing out.
Oh! He's unaware.
Yeah.
So he thought he would have a nice...
Let's say, call this new age person who advocates the solar worship or the earthly, or what do you want to call it, the physical phenomenon of the sun, which has been superseded since the 1850s by the electric telegraph, to bring back that concept and put it as the title of a magazine and have people subscribe to it and have a quote from Viktor Frankl and just energize that is ecologically dangerous. And so he doesn't know the effects of these concepts.
Okay, we're going to let the caller go so we open up the line.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. All right. Okay, Bob, you're back.
Okay.
Would it help if he changed the title of the magazine to The New Sun? I mean, could we still use that? Could we adapt the idea of the sun to the new environment?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it sun, though. I would see in my chart you have solar government warfare 1960 to 77. Universal government warfare. Universal means both inner and outer. That's why you have the rampaging mediums in the 80s, the psychic level. And then 1990 to 2020 of mythic government warfare. So you'd have to use, since that's the time we're in now, what is the appropriate myth or new interpretation of the word myth for the sun? You could say the new myth.
You
have to use the word myth or some reference to that, because the original meaning of myth is word. The Greek word mythos was the word for word, mythos. So maybe he should say the new word.
I like that.
Because the electric environment brings back a verbal universe. And, yeah, I'd say the word. The new word is what he should put in there.
You mentioned JFK earlier. How does that figure into these things?
Well, that's in my chart you have 1990 on holopathic retrieval. Holopathic is a combination of hologram and homeopathy. I don't know if you know about homeopathy, but it uses very diluted, tiny amounts to affect your health.
Right, the molecular trace, or whatever they call it.
Right, it's almost a Buckminster Fuller principle of doing more with less. And this is the way the universe works on the natural level. So the more you do with less, homeopathy takes advantage of that and inoculates you from any problems.
So you're into homeopathy. You believe in that.
No, it's not that I'm into it or believe in it. It's just a fact. It's part of the reason why I can stay healthy.
Okay.
Doing this.
But we've developed new technologies beyond that, and you'll be hearing about them over the next couple of years in the news, when my wife Connie gets a little more publicity.
Excellent.
But that's something else. At this point, so the holopathic retrieval, since everything's disappeared, as we point out in the album, then we have nothing but retrievals. And these retrievals are getting more and more invisible and tinier. So what we've had since 1990, we've had a retrieval of World War III. That was the Iraq War. We've had the retrieval of the JFK assassination, one tiny event in the history of the United States and the world. But under the mixed corporate media effect, it assumes speed of light, massive proportions. So the whole world's involved in it. And like Lockdown Bob Rule is another holopathic retrieval of the fact that I already sort of run the situation, but we will retrieve it in a very tiny proportion, which will assume more power and create more health and threat. So JFK is this holopathic retrieval. symptomatic of the period from 1990-2020. We're going to have more of these.
Like for example, can you predict what some of the homeopathic retrievals will be in, say, the next year or two?
Is that proprietary information? Can you let us know that now?
I don't think so, because you people live in such a media-saturated environment. If you knew a lot about what was happening in the future, you'd get really bored. It takes a lot of comprehensive awareness to handle the exciting life of the electric world and know what's coming beforehand. You have to have other sources of excitement, which I have running the Secret Council 10. So if I told you that, I think psychically you'd be quite bored over the next 5 or 7 years knowing this was going to happen and wouldn't be able to get sort of hypnotically involved in it, which is what everybody wants today, is some kind of hypnotic involvement.
So you'd be kind of ruining the surprise for us, in other words.
Yeah, but rest assured, I manufacture them.
Okay.
That's what we do in the Secret Council 10.
We have another call here we're going to take. Hang on. XYC, you're on the air with Bob.
Yeah, hey, I'm just wondering if the rest of the show is going to be like this, or whether I should keep listening, or what's going on.
Pretty good possibility. You want to talk to Bob?
Not really. I'll just turn off the radio and tune in next week. Thanks a lot.
Okay, see.
Yeah, there's always people who don't want to know, don't want to learn.
Well.
But we need more of those people, because then that keeps my operation tinier.
It's like that. What's that television commercial for the Yellow Pages, where the guy has the store but won't advertise in the Yellow Pages because otherwise everybody would come in and buy all his stuff, and then
and
he wouldn't have any left.
That's right.
His control would slip away from him. Is that what would happen?
That's pretty insightful. Who does that? Local Yellow Pages?
Yeah, it might even be national.
Well, it's actually very clever, because he is advertised as doing this by the Yellow Pages. They found him, and they're broadcasting him doing this.
It's a documentary, like,
yeah.
He does this.
Yeah, the premise of the commercial is the narrator has gone to this guy's store and looked at, and talking to the owner of the store, asking him why he doesn't advertise in the Yellow Pages. And the guy says, if I advertised in the Yellow Pages, it's a toy store, I'd have, like, hundreds of squealing children coming in here buying all my toys, and then I'd have nothing left, and we don't really need that to happen, do we?
Well, that's the idea of, I guess, voodoo economics, doing more with less, which Bush is trying to get you used to. For example, you know, they have no money for TV production, so they just have comedy skits, or comedy stores, and comedy performances are so cheap.
Exactly, and reality stuff like Cops.
The cop stuff costs nothing. In fact, we can't wait till they start filming these people coming into houses that are watching that show.
We got another call here. Hang on. Hi, XYC, you're on the air.
Yeah, I had a question for Bob.
Go ahead.
I wanted to know how he resolved the paradox of the less as more philosophy, and the fact that he's coming out with all this new technology to make life better, to produce more slack. I mean, wouldn't he want to make less technology?
Okay. You've got to understand that the less is more applies to the electric dimension. In the hardware dimension, what we call the Gutenberg galaxy, and before, most of it was visually accessible objects. All right? Applied commodities hardware. Once the telegraph came in, we became what I call discarnate. We brought in a whole new lung and sensory organs that are invisible. Essentially, the 20th century has been invisible. In the sense, you can't see acoustic space. Acoustic space is the term we use for the electric environment, which has a simultaneity like a spoken word environment. So it's a metaphor for electricity, is acoustic space. Now, electricity also is tactile, which is the interpenetrating part of our brain. The tactile sense is that part that interrelates all the senses, creating coherent consciousness. The electric environment is the final achievement of man of extending tactility, the character of our central nervous system. So in tactility, the very pre-Atlantean, pre-mystical, Amazonian, Terence McKenna kind of drug environment, where you're living in a world of discarnate images, and these are addictive, so you don't need that much hardware. So you see how the electric environment does more with less? It isn't an environment of hardware quantity. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think so.
And then the imagery we use involves more and more of stereotypical popular images, so that the audience feeds on itself. That's what popular culture is since Elvis. That's the own our own culture, average working class, let's say, not literate people.
Recycled images.
Spend a lot of time driving cars and
swimming and doing things that are physical nature. These activities of popular culture and the rhythms of what I call kinetic space are fed back to us through the electric environment. So we're feeding on our own image of ourselves.
So Elvis was in some way a turning point, the death of Elvis?
Not the death. Elvis himself was a nostalgic image of the movie radio period, the movie and radio medium. Once TV came in, which is and doesn't have the same characteristics as the movie environment and the radio environment, then you have a whole nostalgic bias towards the movie radio period before TV, and so Elvis represented that. Rock and roll are the rhythms of the machine, the rhythms of kinetic space. It's not the rhythms of television.
So Elvis was a homeopathic retrieval?
Okay, I'll accept that at this point. I mean, in general, yes. He was just a retrieval.
Okay.
But he was approaching homeopathic in the sense more was done with less traditional 19th century cultural values than was done before.
Will there be a homeopathic retrieval of Elvis again, like we retrieved World War and what was the other one we retrieved?
JFK.
Okay, well, let's say the homeopathic retrieval happened this year with Elvis being made a stamp. You remember that?
Right. And it's a small...
I think he's locked it down. He's been retrieved for 20 years, but with becoming a stamp, and you approach visual space like that, you pretty well made it to the original ground.
Malcolm X is about to be retrieved.
Yeah, now there's one for the American black. The Afro-American, they're called now.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, you can just study the slang of a tribe's term for itself as it passed through the last 30 years. There's always a new term that's felt to be used to designate the tribe, a new movement, a new hero. In every tribe, in every anthropomorphic racial tribe, new image is required, and Spike Lee is demanding what I call the black mythic stage to be hoiked up. The mythic stage is that sort of a mixed corporate media capsule. The black mythic stage needs to be revamped in a new global theater of increased tribalism. I don't think Martin Luther King meets that image. He was too literate. He believed in that 19th century goal of equal citizens before the law. Well, we know that the law has evaporated. We know that visual values of justice aren't possible under electric conditions. So what they do is retrieve a more tribal image, and that's Malcolm X.
That is
a homeopathic retrieval.
Get rid of him. Okay, you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We just got the other caller went off the line. That's what that was.
So would be a homeopathic retrieval for the white race?
That was the question I was about to ask you. What is my tribe's homeopathic? Is it Elvis?
No, I think we're talking political. More of a political, national, tribal awareness. I think that's the move that Dan Quayle is trying to ride on.
What about Perot? He might be a good example of pulling that out, looking for the outsider, the interventionist.
Is there a vacuum there? Is there a power vacuum waiting for this retrieval to happen?
Okay, a bunch of points there. First of all, Perot, he is the ultimate American dream. You had various images of the white American dream. First of all, you had George Wallace. Then you had Carter, who was successful. But he was an image from the South that was trying to implement change. Reagan was different. He revamped America's images, not something to change, but to maintain what is called static communion, which is nonverbal communication, just waving.
Oh, right.
So Reagan did that. Then once we moved into this point in the 90s, where we're getting much understanding of the solar government control and the universal government control, you have the rise of intelligence agencies leaders. So we actually have gone past the information age. So now we nostalgically look back at experts of information. So you had Gorbachev and Bush. So that's why it's impossible for Clinton to win in 92.
Is it?
Because he doesn't come out of the intelligence agencies. But now Perot was the last gasp, something beyond Reagan. As each of these tribal images are threatened with the new technological environment, what does Perot represent? He represents American abundance, the hardware gold of immense wealth. But at the same time, he also represents software capabilities. He has little intelligence units. He investigates the POW. He deals with the Iran crisis. He basically, it came out during his tenure that he was spying on the Bush family. He has what every citizen has to the ultimate. He has software capabilities. So
So he represents the computer environment, which he brought in, the electronic data services company.
Hmm.
Now, the computer environment is obsolete, according to my chart, several phases back. So I see Perot representing the computer poltergeist. The computer is the thing that runs the polls. And since the audience has disappeared in the global theater, the very instrument itself, the computer, had to come on and offer itself as the audience. And that's what Perot was. He was the image of software and hardware abundance via computer poltergeist. And when he went on Larry King and quit, you notice that he put the ball back into the audience's hands because he realized there was no audience even for the computer. So that's where Perot was a very important phenomenon. So we live 200 years every 12 months. So we've gone many years past the Perot phenomenon. He ruled for a couple of months. He ruled by the polls. Then Clinton ruled via the convention. But from now on, Bush will rise up because the people, when they get into the visual space of the ballot box, all their tribal biases in the hardware world and the meaning of the White House as a bureaucracy will come back, and they'll forget all about the polls and what they said, which represents their wishes. When they get in that ballot box, they will vote Bush back in. But he's not an American image. That's why we've got a gap here for the white American tribe.
Hmm.
And I think that is what Dan Quayle rides on.
Dan Quayle, in poo-pooing the cultural elite, is appealing to the white trash American tribe.
That's right. The pre-software, anthropomorphic human scale of the white tribe.
Okay, we got another call. Hang on.
Okay.
XYC, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'd like to ask Bob about Ivan Stang and the other subgenius members and what their role is, and also about his assassination.
Okay, we're going to let you go clear up the line.
Okay.
Right.
What did you say about an assassination?
He said you've been assassinated, Bob.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so this was a Stang question?
Indeed.
Okay, there's a lot of confusion about that. When my book comes out this fall called Vatican Communion, there's an explanation of my history going back to 1922. In the back, it's a memo to Prince Charles. I'm releasing my memos to Prince Charles because, you know, he's having trouble and he doesn't have the power anymore. So a lot of these secret memos will explain what happened.
Hmm.
But as a result of the JFK assassination, much power moved to Dallas in the 70s. And I was still working for the Secret Council then, so I spent the 70s in Dallas. Now, at that point, Stang somehow met me. I can't remember the exact details, but he did meet me in the course of my street wanderings when I wasn't working, and I inspired him. And the next thing I know, he's putting out books about me. But I had left Dallas by 1982 after the first strike by the Bolsheviks in the American Pentagon, which Dr. Peter Beter, warned the world about that. And since we weren't going to have nuclear war after September 17, 1982, I was able to move to Toronto to be with my wife, Connie, who is a famous doctor here. And I think this rumor that I've been assassinated comes out of the fact that Stang had to explain my absence. I wasn't in Dallas anymore. There was no evidence of me there. So they had a dummy stage an assassination.
Which they're so good at in Dallas.
Yes.
Well rehearsed.
But I think they did it in Los Angeles.
Couldn't he have cleared up that situation with a couple of phone calls instead of staging an assassination?
No, he doesn't have access to me anymore.
Oh.
I don't think he wants it known that I'm around. And you see, I've inspired many movements. The Church of the Subgenius is just a puny side effect of my work on the planet since 1922. I mean, Finnegan's Wake by James Joyce deals with me. You know, the main character, HCE. It's about me. Many people think it stands for Here Comes Everybody. But you look at those letters, they become Bob very easily. But the point is, I've inspired many movements, and I didn't have much opportunity from the middle 80s till 88, that's four-year period, to interact with many people because we were locking down Bob Rule in the solar government level, and I was running for chairman of the Secret Council 10, and I don't think anybody could have got access to me, and so Stang just felt left out.
Are you the chairman, Bob?
Yes, I was elected in March 88. We did it on the airwaves at CKLN.
How long is your term?
Till 2020.
I noticed that's
so you'll be where like the chart 102 or something by then, right?
It says 1990 to 2020.
Yeah.
Lockdown Bob Rule. If you notice, it says mythic government warfare. The warfare is always the previous stage of lockdown. So mythic stages are what we're witnessing is popular entertainment now, and that's why all the various tribal groups are waking up their own history and their own roots in an image battle with other obsolete mythic tribal groups.
You're listening to WXYC Chapel Hill, Northern Hemisphere, live on this Sunday evening, and our guest by long-distance telephone from Toronto?
Yes.
Toronto.
Is Bob from the Producers for Bob album, and any further introductions I'll leave to these guys. Our number is 962-8989 if you'd like to talk to him.
Bob is
or talk
also
to Bob. And Bob, yeah.
The chairman of the Secret Council of Ten. Now, I know that this might make it so it wouldn't be a secret, but could you tell us, introduce some of the other members of the Secret Council of Ten?
Sure, I'll tell you, we went public in 88 when we had the election. My competitors were Prince Turn and Taxes. Did you ever read the article in Vanity Fair magazine in the early 80s on Miss TNT? You might have seen it on David Letterman, Gloria Turn and Taxes. Very powerful German family. Anyways, he was one of them. He died a year or so ago. But his wife was very popular in the social circuit in Manhattan, and Mick Jagger was a good friend of hers and went to a lot of Turn and Taxes' birthdays.
So okay. You're not all immortal. You're just you?
I'm not immortal.
Yeah.
I'm just going to be around as long as I want. Eventually, I have to kill myself just to get out of this body.
Okay.
But not till my work is done. It's an Eskimo sensibility to be able to kill yourself when you've done your life, done your work. But anyways, you got Prince Turn and Taxes. You've got a man named Mr. Romanov, who was very influential in Gorbachev's rise. He's not linked to the Romanov dynasty. Just has the same name. But he was the other person competing with me, and the third person was Prince Charles himself.
We need to interrupt you here for a second and go to a call.
Okay.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'll just ask my question and hang up.
Okay.
I'd like to know, well, Bob is sounding more and more as having something in common with the evil Bob character from Twin Peaks, and I'd like to know if there's any connection there.
Yeah, he spoke to that. You want to go over that again, Bob?
Yeah, this person, Scott. Is he gone?
Yeah, what did you say?
Okay, but basically I said that was every medium, including the maker of any medium, or the maker of the content, projects a user as content. Not only the users, but the maker. So David Lynch knew that Lockdown Bob Rule was happening. He predicted me since Blue Velvet. I mean, Eraserhead is a very good depiction of the paranoia at the Secret Council of Ten level. The hallucinating hologramic life where you create your own problems. And so he is sort of tracked. He has been a good artist in that sense. He's tracked the sensibility around me to Eraserhead and then Blue Velvet. I think he blew it in the Dune, right? Did you ever see the Dune?
Yeah, that was
Yeah, that it worked somewhat if you took off about the first 10 minutes.
Right, but I think he was a bit confused. He was really worried about the first strike, that subconsciously, at least coming in 82, and he made it in the early 80s. So I just don't think he was maintaining his subgenius traits, probably because he was working in Hollywood and the pink zone there just overwhelmed him. But he regained his sensibilities with Blue Velvet, which is really about Connie and I, and Love Letters in the Sand. That's a very great song, favorite of ours. But with Twin Peaks, which you think of B-O-B, two letters, right? I mean, two equal letters, B-O-B, 202, B the second letter. So you got two peaks, the B, and you put the B on the side, it's a mountain, right? So you got two mountains. So the B-O-B is a ideogram for Bob. But in Twin Peaks, I think he represented the mixed corporate media environment itself, since he's not a very comprehensive person in relation to my knowledge, but he does intuit, like any artist is the intent of the race, he does intuit Bob is coming. But he projects a paranoid version of Bob, Bob taking us over, and Bob basically hijacking people.
Inhabiting them.
Inhabiting them like a technological vampire. It's important to see, to understand, and most of the critics didn't understand his metaphor of Bob, that Bob was the electric technological environment, and that he wiped out the human scale, the anthropomorphic scale. So I think it was a projection of Bob as the disservices of me. And there are disservices of my operation, but there are, I think, in a Platonist sense, the services outweigh the disservices.
What was it about Lynch's Bob that made him like to murder women?
I think that is a male projection. Because the electric environment is largely right hemisphere and has feminine qualities, as I say on the album, women will take over at least the old bureaucratic state apparatuses because they have a more natural ecological environment, ecological instinct. The problem is with women is that there are no women anymore, and there are no men anymore. We're all discarnate entities. We don't have any sexual bias or gender or characteristic. I mean, at least we're unisexual, but I think we have a more sexual involvement with discarnate electric environments than we do with physical bodies. So over time, as Marsh McLuhan predicted, sex will die off as a neurosis. But the problem is a new neurosis surfaces, that surfacing of a discarnate addiction. So I think that shows that Lynch's inability to understand the real meaning of Bob, who is not male or female. So he projects the old male aggressive factor that Camille Paglia writes about. She says male is violence and women is primal nature. So the violent part of the historical nature of men is projected on Lockdown Bob Rule. I mean, my station, CKLM, was run by a very vocal, very aggressive feminist caucus. And even in that environment, I was able to operate because they understood that Bob was not a patriarchal image because they were schooled well on my show. But most people see Bob as a patriarchal image, which he's not, and I think that was Lynch's downfall, is he has the Bob character invading women, where in the end, he invades Dale Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
The woman was just the means to get Cooper there and then in the last scene to take it over.
Right.
So I think Stang picks up on that. He picks up on the resurging of the male impulse in a new form. And that's why he emphasized the male aspect, and many people think the Church of Some Genius is a boys' club. But it's not, it is a male thing, but it's not male. It's a discarnate male. Because with the women running the bureaucratic apparatus of our planet in the 21st century, the real ground is information. And that's what the men will still run. But I want the women to understand how the men will run it, so they won't get worried about it, and how also these men, especially the pink versions, will run it to the ground and not do it properly without media ecology.
We'll get into the pink thing in a second. Let's take a call. Hi, XYC, you're on the air.
Yes, I listen to your program every Sunday. This is such a crock. What kind of a guy is this you have on now? He speaks in outer space language. Nobody's listening to this that understands a word he says. I think he's self-appointed egotist, and he'll never get anywhere with any general public.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay. Do you care to respond?
You'll never get anywhere with what?
You'll never get anywhere, period.
Well, we're not trying to get anywhere. We're just trying to make sure you've arrived.
We've arrived, but you're practically dead already, kid.
I'm not a kid. I'm 70 years old. Huh? Listen, you should study what Captain Beefheart meant when he said, "I'm not really here. I just stick around for my friends." That's the nature of the discarnate environment. And also, there were 40 people on the Secret Council of 10, which Captain Beefheart realized when he said, "There are 40 people in the world, and 5 of them are hamburgers."
Hi, XYC, you're on the air.
Hi there. I want to know if where to send my dollars and if there's a Bobathon.
For a Bobathon?
Yeah.
The Dove Entertainment. I don't have the address. Well, do you guys have the address?
Yes, we do. I'm sure we can wrestle it up by the end of the show.
So the caller, you don't think that Bob is a joke and is finished and is getting nowhere or whatever it was that the previous caller said?
Well, I don't know, but I hope I can arrive.
I think you're probably halfway there.
Great. Thanks.
The address is?
2 Bloor, is that correct?
Yeah.
B-L-O-O-R Street West, number 100-159, Toronto, Ontario, Canada, M4W3E2.
Yeah, 2 Bloor Street West, number 100-159, Toronto, Ontario, M4W3E2. And the new phone number is 416, I think it might be 533-7887, but you could give out the other number in case it's still that.
You know, okay. That number to be called in order to do what?
To make orders or send money or assassination attempts, whatever you want to do.
Okay, call. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks so much.
Bye. Let me ask you, WXYC Chapel Hill is what you're listening to, Northern Hemisphere Live on this Sunday evening. It's coming up on 7 o'clock. Bob,
I have no connection with Doug. I didn't have anything to do with this CD. You see, this CD was put up by Tom Touche. He used to be my butler, to use an old term. That's the best that we could say he was. And he has set up this whole situation with the CD and the video and the things that are coming out to try to hijack my situation. So I, as I've explained on CBC here in Canada, I have nothing to do with this CD.
Like the other guy in Dallas, huh?
Yeah, and so I don't know if I gave out the wrong number, but the other number is 7669612, 7669612, just in case that other number doesn't work.
Okay.
I have so much money, I don't mind Tom Touche getting money to keep this thing going on his level, but it doesn't have anything to do with me.
Hi, XYC, you're on the air.
Yes, I was just, I was listening to Bob and his, her, it's great. And I was wondering if Bob was in any way connected with John, the race of Johns from The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai across the eighth dimension, because there were women named John, and Bob was talking about his asexuality. And I was wondering if that was in any way connected.
From, what was that, Planet 8 or something like that they talked about?
Yeah, it was The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai across the eighth dimension.
Yeah.
with Peter Weller from Planet 10. That's right.
Planet 10. That's right.
Yeah. Bob, are you from Planet 10?
No.
Okay.
It was Planet 22 in numerical terms, and then it became 14.
Right. Okay. Did you yourself orchestrate the getting rid of the eight planets in between, or?
Nope. Sort of like in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I have a whole factory rebuilding those planets.
That's excellent. All right. Well, thanks a lot. That clears a lot up for me.
Yeah, but the thing about John, John is certainly not connected to me, but if you notice in the book Finnegan's Wake,
mm-hmm.
James Joyce made a lot out of the John. It is quite an interesting pun because you have the seat of extra meditation that Stang talks about. That's sitting on the John, right?
Right.
And then you have John's role with Christ. You have prostitutes calling their customers John. The John is one of the, I'd say it makes a short list of one of the most interesting words, which has mythic dimensions and resonates with so much of human activity, like Bob. It's not quite as far as Bob or as deep
so,
or as...
So John is eternal also, but not quite on the same level as
yeah,
you.
It's not the original amoeba.
Okay.
What are some of those other words?
Yeah, we're going to let the caller go.
Okay.
Okay, another word is the word set, which is the longest word in the dictionary. It has the longest entry. And that comes from Seth, an Egyptian god. And Seth is actually a very negative character in Egyptian mythology. But Set is a very interesting word. You can do a lot with the word Set, and it's a name, a proper noun in many languages.
Is that actually true? Is the definition for Set the longest definition in the dictionary?
Yeah, that takes up the most space.
Is that every English language dictionary or one particular edition?
No, the standard one, the Oxford is the best.
Okay, the OED.
How about the same word in a different language in their dictionaries? Is it translated into other languages the same way?
No, because every language determines the concepts that the user thinks. That's a common premise that Marshall took further. Marshall McLuhan, one of our holy offices, took the premise that a language evokes certain concepts and is limited to those evocations. But you think of new media as environments, as new languages, then they evoke certain thoughts. That's why all the revolutions of the last 30 years are evoked by television and are limited to what television can evoke.
So you're not one for the purity of language. You think language must grow in order to reflect the more current images or concepts?
Well, that's a key point. That is a key understanding of tetrad management. The tetrad is that four-part process in the notes where you enhance some concept or percept, it then obsolesces the previous one, retrieves one that was forgotten, and flips into its opposite. That understanding of the nutritious, evolving, mutating nature of language and new media as living organisms is a necessity of Bob knowledge.
Are you talking like, say, bad used to mean bad and now it can mean good or bad?
Yeah, the context for how it's used mutates it and the users. Like the word cool in the 20s meant very detached. In the 50s, it meant involved. But not exactly. Some people might think that cool jazz, Miles Davis, was a detached pose. But you notice it wasn't detached. He communicated by gesture, by emphatic communion. He would turn his back to the audience. He wouldn't interact verbally with the audience. So in the 20s, cool had a verbal meaning, but then it had a gestural meaning, which meant really involved communication with the audience, not what a literate person does via books, but involved communication in acoustic arts like jazz, so that it was a form of emphatic communion and therefore had a different meaning. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's a figure-ground relationship. Each word's a figure. As the ground changes with new environments, then the meaning of the figure changes.
Okay. 962-8989. Hi, you're on the air. Not anymore.
Oh, we lost him.
Okay. Bob?
Yes.
This Bob.
Talk about the Pinks for us a little bit, Bob. I think some people may not know that term.
Okay. Well, the Pinks were the ones who ran the Secret Council of Ten, the one that was modeled on Venice. The Pinks are, generally I define a pink as anybody who bugs you. Most of humanity therefore experiences pinks, right?
Right.
But that it's like a word, like a language. That pink syndrome that everybody experiences, they always experience people since the beginning of humanity, always experience people who bug you. That becomes its own thought form, an own current that takes on a life of its own. And that generally ran humanity, that fear, for thousands of years. And that was what the battle of the 20th century was, bringing in new subgenius electric technologies, which sort of diminished the power of the pink situation to continue a centralized control. And when we locked down Bob Rule, and when I took over the Secret Council of Ten before that, was the beginning of the demise of pink control of our world as a thought form. In other words, you're gonna find you are as slack and gendered and you understand what's happening, you're not going to be bugged anymore.
Oh, okay.
That's good.
So that's a positive thing.
So pink has lost its meaning relating to either being communist or socialist or left-wing or whatever, and or the homosexual sort of implications of it.
Right. Another meaning it was you're either pink or red, and pink referred to Pinkerton, the police agency.
Mm-hmm.
You know that old phrase, the Pinkerton British police agency? They were like the beginning detective agencies, and so as you got more in the 20th century with Big Brother surveillance of people, you either were red or pink, and pink could have meant a spy.
Bob,
that's not a well-known meaning of pink.
Bob, talk a little bit about how AIDS has changed sex attitudes. You said sex, gender, and sex are dead. Did AIDS have anything to do with that, or is AIDS somehow a cause or a response to that?
Oh, yeah, it certainly is. You take what happened in 1985 with the live AIDS situation, that thing that Geldof did,
mm-hmm.
That was a replay of the mixed corporate media implosion of the 60s, where you had television, radio, computer, and satellite. Now, that was a hidden ground in the 60s, so that the Woodstock generation put it into a tribal, primitive metaphor as a figure of the effect. Then once we got in the 80s, where everybody was acquainted with this mixed corporate media electric environment, Bob Geldof retrieved it, replayed it, almost as a homeopathic retrieval, replayed it, and as a service environment. He emphasized the service, the good effect of that 60s mixed corporate media environment, not the hippie content, but the environment itself. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the disservices of the 60s environment was the death of pink morality, leading to unlicensed freedom among people who weren't qualified with subgenius understanding, leading to excessive tactility. See, the electric environment is tactile. And the American kinetic citizen thinks that sex is tactile, but tactility is not contact. That's proprioceptive, that's kinetic, where you press on something. Real tactility is the interval. So when you press your fingers on an object, when you lift them off, let go from the object and then press back down, it's that letting go and pressing, which is the nature of rhythm and music and the resonant interval, which is the nature of tactility.
So wait a minute here. Are you saying that in some way the disco free sex environment of the mid-70s, whatever, was in some way a misappropriation of the good karma of the 60s?
Right. Well, let's just say that the general period from the 60s on, the sexual revolution, was a misinterpretation of tactility. It actually was the American kinetic content. So the user is the content. And the user of the tactile electric mixed corporate media environment was an American. He put a kinetic sexual interpretation on it. Now, that is the ground, the tactility of the 60s. What happened is that in the 80s, you have AIDS as the disservice of tactile interplay. And so it's interesting that this gets retrieved. The disservice of the tactility of the 60s gets retrieved in the 80s via Bob Geldof with his live aid, and then you have AIDS as a figure and a concern through the 60s, through the 80s. So you see how the words, the language communicates something to us. They both have the same letters.
So it's not a homeopathic retrieval of the bubonic plague or something.
No. I'm trying to explain. So AIDS showing the disservice of too much tactility. In other words, you will drive people, especially Americans, into such sexual kinetic obsession that they will create a disease out of it. And so therefore, that's why you have to have Bob's Media Ecology. You have to turn off the TV environment temporarily so we can cool off the excessive tactility we have. All right?
So the disease is a result of this imbalance, this excessiveness.
That's right, the excesses of tactility. And both phenomena happened in 85. You had the live aid showing the services of tactility, the fact that the whole world can communicate as one pulsating systole diastole organism, like a heart. But at the same time, if you have too much of that pulsating interpenetration, you get a disease like AIDS. So the body is wiped out under tactile conditions, including famine and the whole normal physical level of the body is suffering under our tactile electric environment to such an extreme that these are the figures of our time. These are the disservice figures. AIDS and famine. The death of the body. I mean, they talk about it even in postmodernism. Everybody knows about the death of the body in 80s art, but they don't know the hidden cause. And that's what I'm an expert on, and I'm recommending a temporary media fast on tactility.
Was there anything to the coincidence, or was it coincidence that Geldof's name is Bob?
I can't say anything about that right now.
Oh, okay.
And you know why?
Why?
Because he has been locked into Prince Charles. Charles Camp. Remember he got the OBE?
Yeah.
He was knighted and all that stuff?
Right.
So I'm not talking about him.
So you're at odds with Charles?
Oh, yeah. You know, when my CD came out, his marriage fell apart.
And that was related in what way?
Well, see, the point is that we had the Secret Council 10 election, and I beat Charles, Turn and Taxes, and Romanoff. There was four of us. There are 40 people in the Secret Council 10, as Beefheart hinted at. And you had generally 10 people supporting each figure. But I was on the air at CKLN, and I rigged the computer such that the callers who voted, and they weren't authorized by the Secret Council 10, were able to, like a virus, alter the computer projection, so I won. And as a result of that, for the public, for the many publics that exist in the global theater, Taxis, Charles, and Romanoff have to continue pretending that they have a power base. And so Prince Charles, the last 3 years, has been operating his power base in a vacuum. And it's eroded to the point, right when my CD comes out, that he really gets exposed and is naked. And so I would say that he was able to keep something going from 88 till 92, but as of now, he's lucky he doesn't kill himself for his image problems. I'm not saying he should kill himself, but I'm saying that they worried about Di killing herself in the 80s.
Really. Yeah,
now they're going to worry about him.
What was it about him that Di wanted to kill herself?
Well, he's a pig. I mean, the guy is incapable of managing the world, and he's bringing back the only thing that he can recommend, which Lyndon LaRouche is a great expose of this. The service of LaRouche exposes the feudal basis of ecology, how these oligarchs who want to create a back-to-the-land movement hijack the ecology movement to lock down a purpose for Prince Charles. It's the great environmentalist, but it's based on the old natural environment, which has been superseded by the new nature of electric environments. And we need to control the new natures before we even attempt to help nature, the old nature.
At that moment, let's take another call. Hi, XYC, you're on the air with Bob.
Bob, this is all well and good, but where does slack fit into all this?
The slack comes from understanding this stuff.
Can you
think it's going to be that easy to have slack?
Oh, come on. You're selling us a bill of goods here.
Of course I am, but if something's the only worth... thing worth buying today.
Well, slack is the only thing worth buying today.
And it can only be bought.
How do you...
Through understanding. I don't mean you send me your money, but you have to put something out. You have to give something out. It's the law of satisfaction. To get some satisfaction, you have to give something out. You've got to do your homework and study the 10 holy offices we have listed on our liner notes here that was put out in this Bob Media Ecology. You've got to do your homework.
Holy slack, I don't want to do any homework.
Well, then you'll have to face the consequences.
Oh, my God.
In other words, heaven is already here, but also hell is here. And if you don't move towards heaven in the proper strategy, you'll end up in hell, which you probably already are.
Oh, well, you bet. Well, look, Bob, I just want to say, just cut us some slack here.
Well, I'm trying to. What do you think I'm doing as manager of the Secret Council 10 and this Tetrad management? Listen, let me tell you one thing.
I think you need a vacay. That's what I'm saying.
I'm always on vacation.
You've been working too hard.
No, I'm always on. Look, I have slack. I've never worked a day in my life. Never actually earned a dollar on the normal plebeian money as poor man's credit card level.
Gosh.
But listen to this. The point is I have responsibilities. Now, if the world breakup is happening right now, especially in Yugoslavia and all these crises, if that happened 20 years ago, we would have had nuclear war. But the fact we had television, and this is the service of the tactile, slack-engendering meaning of television, because we had this television which made the whole world be discarnate, it kept us in a limbo so that no particular militaristic agenda could be achieved or accomplished. And so now that we've arrived at this point where these things and flare-ups around the regional trouble spots of the world will happen, they're within a slack, locked-down, barbaro situation, and we won't have nuclear war. That's the first thing you should celebrate that I brought in.
Now, Bob, that's a mighty tall New World Order there.
It's very tiny. One person managing the whole thing.
Oh, my goodness.
Think of that, how tiny and microscopic, what radioactive it is.
Well, where do you get your slack from?
From being able to do what I want to do.
All right.
Which is give you slack.
All right. Well, thanks. Well, I appreciate that. I'm satisfied with that.
Well,
okay, great.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Bob.
Okay. Bob.
Yeah.
Every once in a while when I'm listening to, say, Larry King in the middle of the night, somebody will call up and talk about this.
Howard Stern?
No, not Howard Stern, but you will. Some sort of, like, a secret organization on the line of the Freemasons, but not the Freemasons, that sort of runs the world, and they call it, what is it, the Tripartite?
Well, the Trilateral Commission.
Trilateral Commission, yeah.
You don't know about the Trilateral Commission.
Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Is this will be Larry King's radio show. I'd have never heard that on the TV show.
Yeah, the radio show.
Yeah, at 11 at night. That's where the real stuff happens.
Right. Yeah, about 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning.
That's right. Larry King is one of the biggest pinks in the world, and he's actually imitating my talk show, Slack Engendering Reality. But, it's terrible, and he has heart attacks, he can't keep a wife. It's a problem for Larry to be forced in a pink CNN operation. Think of CNN, three letters, like a perversion of B.O.B., right?
I understand he listens to tapes of your show all the time.
Oh, yeah, he tries to pick up the charisma or the charm level to figure out how to dialogue, but he has such a pink clientele, the guests he has, and the audience is largely pinks, and it's a pitiful show. Anyways, the only thing good about CNN is headline news, right? You find out what the pinks are up to in 5 minutes.
Pinks being obnoxious, annoying people.
Yeah.
Okay.
And usually nice looking.
That's true. God, I haven't thought about that.
They put a lot of nice people in ads, nice looking people, and the tribal environment creates body love, which leads to beauty worship. And we have had beauty worship slapped at us for 30 years so much that we find beautiful people ugly. That's why the young kids make themselves look like they're in concentration camps. Right?
Right.
They want to be ugly because you can't... Beauty... See, this is... You put any process to extreme, it slips. So beautiful people make people now puke. That's too bad. I'm a beautiful person, so I got to remain anonymous because I can't take all that bad vibrations coming at me. Engendered by this environment that makes the average citizen hate beautiful-looking people.
Is that why ugly male rock stars marry beautiful models?
Yeah, because they're losers.
Yeah. They couldn't get them any other way.
Well, being a rock star is the worst condition you can live in today, and they are given the spoils of the pink world. Rotten, AIDS-infected people. So and they don't even know what they have. They're going to find that out in 5 years. But lucky Connie has the cure, and you hear about that. What was the point we were talking about?
That's what Connie has, the cure for AIDS.
That's right.
Okay.
And I'm not bullshitting you. You'll find out. You'll find out about it.
All right.
You will hear about it within the next year.
We look forward to it.
But what was the question? I forget why we went on about beauty worship.
The Trilateral Commission.
Oh, yeah. The Trilateral Commission was the pink version. Now, that was set up by David Rockefeller in 1972-73. And many people think Carter, who was a member of it, was an agent for the Trilateral Commission. But you have to read the Dr. Beter audio letter tapes. You have to listen to him and study the notes to them because he explains the obsolescence of the Rockefeller Empire by the late 70s. So the Trilateral Commission can be popularized as something that's controlling us, which is inevitable when you deal with the money medium. You have a Big Brother situation that comes out of the 19th century inevitably because of the center margin structure of money. Now, the problem is that money is obsolete under electric conditions. So... the Trilateral Commission is propagated as an obsolete image that the Birchers rant on about, John Birch Society, as if Rockefeller had any power. He doesn't have any power. The more interesting groups are coming out of Europe, like the P2 and the Bilderbergers. Now, Rockefeller was part of the Bilderbergers, but there are other oligarchic ancient nobility factions in the Bilderbergers which are more interesting. So the big secret for people to understand today is that since the early 80s, all governments around the world, all government institutions that have been built up since the 30s, were bankrupt. This leaves room for the Prince Charles and Turnitaxis nobilities who have wealth based on investment and profit, not on debt, like the industrial banks. So they are the only ones with money, and that's why Prince Charles has come over and sponsored Albert Gore and had a lot of influence in Washington over the last couple of years because they're the only ones with money.
Hmm.
And capital is moving around the planet in a solar orbit, moving at the speed of light, and governments cannot trap it. They cannot affect it as it moves into tax shelves around or all over the place.
And they can't tax it. Let's take a call. Hi, XYC, you're on the air.
Hi, how is the Trilateral Commission related to Illuminati?
That is the general pink syndrome. There always have been pinks in little secret groups running society for thousands of years. The big thing about history today is that since 88, is that the pinks no longer run the Illuminati. I run the Illuminati, all right? And it's going to have a different agenda. It's going to be made more, people-friendly, user-friendly. It's going to be brought in under media management. All the Illuminati was visual space. It came out of the phonetic alphabet in Greece. In other words, you have a center margin structure. You can read Harold Innes about that, where visual space ruled us for 3,000 years. But the electric environment is going to liberate us from visual space, from money as a control mechanism. And all the Illuminati were just appendages to the fact that the usurious money banking environment was part of the new nature and inevitable. The good news is that that's not going to work anymore. Now, what was his point? How does that relate to Illuminati?
Yeah.
The Illuminati, the Secret Council of Ten, the Rockefeller's Private Commission, the P2 Society, all are agents of visual space. But since I'm a master of electric media, then money becomes a small part of the media I'm dealing with. The Illuminati are a small part of my government agenda. So that's why you have turned taxes and Prince Charles, members of the Illuminati, as subservient to me in the Secret Council of Ten, because I didn't have that tetratic knowledge.
And Lyndon LaRouche.
Now, LaRouche is still operating on the old pink version of visual space Illuminati. He's accurate up to this point. I don't think he fully understands the Marshall McLuhan and Harold Innes insight of how flight capital cannot be nationalized. I appreciate him trying to retrieve the subgenius advantages of nationhood and individual sovereignty, but he has a real problem as long as we have an electric environment that's not controlled to implement that. So at this point, LaRouche cannot implement his program, but he has the right perspective on the history of visual space, the Platonists versus the Aristotelians.
All right, we need to take a call here. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. Well, two things. One thing that you mentioned earlier was that when your work is finished, you will kill yourself. And I would like to know what the work is that you need to finish and how you will kill yourself.
Okay.
That's the lockdown Bob rule. That's the 2020. You know it's the 22 there. But the point is that once I've done that, which is going to happen, and my job, my work will be successful, then I have a problem. I can stay here forever, and in a sense, because of the success of my work, like Jesus, create this after image that people worship and miss the whole point of slack engendering. I don't want to rule forever. So, since I could live forever, I have an existential problem. How can I die, since I already have an immortal body in terms of the chemicals and homeopathic solutions that we'll be able to use to keep ourselves going? I could stay here forever. But it's kind of a martyrdom. I will have to kill myself to go into other dimensions. And I do want to work in other dimensions, not just this dimension.
In order to get some slack, if for nothing else.
I have a question.
That's right. My success could flip into failure if I don't get rid of myself.
Regarding that, are you going to have to somehow discredit yourself so you don't have the afterimage problems that Jesus had when you kill yourself? What's going to happen there?
That's very insightful. I'll just say that is something you should remember you thought and said.
Okay, we have another call here. I see you on the air.
Hi, I got a factual question for Bob. You had made a comment earlier about Pinks and Pinkertons.
Yes.
And you had said that the Pinkston Agency originated in London, as I recall.
Well, I think I said it's British Intelligence, but...
British Intelligence, okay.
But it's an American agency, but it was run by British Intelligence.
Okay. Given that information, Alan Pinkerton, who was born in Glasgow, Scotland in 1819, moved to Chicago in 1843.
Right.
In 1852, Pinkerton's National Detective Agency was formed. It had nothing to do with England, British intelligence, or anything like that.
Yeah.
So, Bob, you're
nothing.
Didn't you just hear yourself? He was born in Glasgow. Do you think that he forgot his oligarchic connections when he came to Chicago?
Okay. Well, anyway, Bob, get your facts straight.
That's naive.
No, it's factual. Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Whoa, we lost him.
We're experiencing technical difficulties.
We've lost
Bob. Stand by.
Okay, you have to dial.
Fade the music.
Okay.
Yeah, we're gonna get him back. Hang on.
You never heard the show. You don't know I'm on a political campaign here.
You're on a political campaign?
Yeah, I run this.
Okay.
I think you'd agree with me. I said it was British intelligence. This guy has a serious visual bias. Just because he went from Glasgow to Chicago, does that mean he's not connected to British intelligence? Isn't that naive?
Definitely. Definitely naive.
I don't think the guy made the point he claims he made. He claims that I was wrong and the facts are wrong. I mean, I was sophisticated when I said it was British intelligence. I know Pinkerton's an American agency, and he's claiming maybe he said it was neither American or British. Did he say that?
I'm not sure what he said. I think he just wanted to point out that it's good to have people's facts straight.
Yeah.
Okay.
But facts are a figure ground relationship.
Hi, Axel. I see you're on the air.
Yes. Are you the dead donkey? Yes.
You are the dead donkey.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Remember Jesus rode in on a donkey?
Yes.
Into Bethlehem, one of those places over there?
Over there, yeah.
That's right, which aren't over there anymore. They're all inside our phone. We are in touch with everything in telephone electric conditions. You know, everybody is in your phone, and you are in everybody's phone. That's how discarnate and interconnected we are. So to use the phrase over there is a reference to geographical space, and that's obsolete, and that's why Jesus is having trouble to institute the second coming. How can you bring back one person in a discarnate situation where we contain many bodies, right?
So what does this have to do with you being the dead donkey?
Well, he rode in on the donkey. Now, the donkey is the awkwardness of reality, a symbol, the humble, humiliated syndrome of being a human being with consciousness, all right, separate from the animals. Now, the donkey is four legs awkwardly bobbling along. That is an expression of the absolute, an expression of the absolute mystical present, the capital P present that we all live in, and it is an invariant. And the reason the donkey represents that is because it looks awkward and ugly and kind of kinetically bowling around like a person doing a twist while drunk or on LSD or something, right? That aspect, which art always expresses, real art expresses the present, and the present is always ugly to the pinks. So to I am ugly because I express the present in terms of my perceptual power, and the donkey is my appropriate symbol.
Well, let me ask you this. You just said a little while ago that, that George Bush is going to win re-election. There's no way Clinton can defeat him.
No, yeah, he will. You know, but is it the reason? Okay, what were we going to say?
And now the question is, if that's true, will the Bush-Quayle ticket be able to sort of, based on this mandate that they're going to get by getting re-elected in the face of all odds, be able to push through their quote-unquote family values sort of Nazi agenda?
Yeah, the white person agenda.
Yeah.
Yeah. They will do that as long as we have this hyper-televised mixed corporate media environment, because there's only, for the pinks, the only resort they have is to go back to tribal identity. And because they've locked down the wealth of America, then they can control that image, and they will reinforce that. That's going to be a problem in America in the 90s, is that the Republican right wing is going to win and dominate. And you cannot... You see, the problem with the progressives, the leftists, whatever they call it, people who want to change and implement a more liberal or a tolerant agenda...
The cultural elite.
Yeah, they're called the cultural elite. The problem is that they cannot implement any progressive reform because the sensibilities are changing with each new technological environment. We have many technological environments, many changes of our sensibilities. Any target you set for bureaucratic reform can never keep up with the changes. So the left and the liberal always ends up exhausted because he can't keep up with the software changes because he's still trying to implement a hardware bureaucratic legislative situation which never meets the needs of people as their needs change. And so the liberal will never win in the United States over the next 10 years until we implement at least the beginning of media ecology.
Okay. Hi, so I see you're on the air.
Yeah, I'd like to ask Bob about the Exodus and X-Day and how those relate to him.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Stang picked up a bit of that knowledge, and he has the date July 5th, 1998, as the day the Exodus land. The day they dominate us, wipe us off the planet, especially the pinks. And according to the Book of the Subgenius Dogma that Stang created, is that if Bob is not empowered by them, his Bob Dobbs, and enabling the Subgenius to have this rapture, then the whole planet will be wiped out by the Exodus. Only Bob can communicate with the Exodus. Well, because we live 200 years every 12 months, 1998 happened in 1988 in calendar terms. I mean, it's hard to say what time it really was if we lived 200 years every 12 months. What time is it now since 1945? But for the sake of brevity, 1988 was the calendar time when the Exodus did land. Now, you can get tapes of these shows from Dove. They stole all these tapes from me, take them off the radio. But in 1988, when they came in February, and they're from the Bootes constellation, you can look it up. It's even on the back cover of One Size Fits All, Frank Zappa's album, 1975. You'll see a picture of the constellation Bootes. That is where the particular intergalactic species that is programmed and historically assigned the job of establishing contact with us. And they will do it in the 90s.
That's B-O-O-T-E-S, right?
Yeah, and it has an umlaut over one of the O's.
Right, okay.
It's a German word.
Let's take another...
But the Exodus, they arrived here in 88 in relation to me and the Secret Council of Ten and helped me win the Secret Council of Ten election in March.
So they're
by 89,
here.
I started playing private conversations I've had with the Exodus over the radio. We predicted all kinds of things. We predicted the Berlin Wall would go down. We talked to James Joyce. We did an incredible tape on the Illuminati from 1400 to the year 2000. talking to the extras, who have a very unique view of what's happening and what did happen because they could see it. They weren't part of this human dimension and weren't involved in the blinders and the perceptual difficulties of seeing it. You can get those tapes, and you will hear many long dialogues with the extras. This is an exclusive that Toronto had.
Okay.
It's true. You'll be impressed with the knowledge that I evoke from the extras.
962-8989, you're on the air. Hello? Hello, caller?
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm sorry, but I missed the beginning of the show, and I'm not exactly sure who you are.
Oh, we should reintroduce our guest. Our guest is Bob from...
Bob's Media Ecology, a release out on DOV Records. Producers for Bob would be the name of the group, and Bob is here with us on the radio talking to us from Toronto.
Bob is also the chairman of the Secret Council of Ten.
And also does a radio program on a Canadian radio station.
And the four-part structure of the donkey is the tetrad.
Dun, 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 tetrad?
Yes.
Okay, so what's your question?
I just remembered, I forgot to point out the four-part structure of the donkey as a symbol of meat is illustrated in the tetrad. But let's go to the caller's question.
What's your question, caller?
I'm interested in your comments on ruling power, an extreme egoistic personality that people like Jesus had.
You need to turn your radio down a little. You're feeding back.
You want me to comment on Christ, the Christian legacy?
No, I want you to comment on your own role in relation to your philosophy. I mean,
my ego?
Yes.
Such as it is.
Okay, well, I always have to interpret my ego to people because I sound like I have an ego, but that's because I'm discarnate at this point. I am using an obsolete medium of speech, verbal speech, in a discarnate post-verbal medium of radio and telephone. That's not a verbal language. That's post-verbal. So if you try to talk about the silent sea of electricity in verbal terms, you will appear to be egotistical. But I'm making every effort to point beyond the content of what I'm saying and point out the corporate palm of the mixed corporate media environment.
Okay, you said post-verbal. I mean, did you mean pre-verbal? I mean, what do you mean by post-verbal?
The electric environment does retrieve pre-verbal, language-oriented stuff. I mean, in simple terms, you can communicate with gesture. You can communicate with ESP. These are not mouth media, okay? And verbal...
Simulacrum, or...
It's a simulation, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
And so, I didn't really finish, but maybe you're still listening. The point is that I might appear egotistical because the ego is centered in the word. Now, one of my agendas... You can call Mondo 2000 and harass them because they got a copy of an interview, an excellent interview that was done with me in Costa Rica by Jerry Fialca, Zappa's person, Zappa's butler out there at Barco Swill. He interviewed me in January in Costa Rica, and they sent the interview to Mondo 2000, and I bet you they don't print it. But in that, I explain how I bring back the verbal situation, which appears egotistical, and make it non-egotistical. But when you start off this agenda, it appears egotistical. But how do we bring back the ego if we're swamped in the mixed corporate media, non-identity, non-person world? How do you bring back the power of speech? And how would you bring back that caller's ego when she gets obliterated with too much slack? You have to learn how to use your mouth medium.
Okay, let's take another call here. Hi, XYC, you're on the air.
I just want to ask Bob if he's familiar with the song that goes, Mr. Dabalina, Mr. Bob Dabalina.
Yeah, CBC interviewed me on April 30th, and they played that at the end of the interview.
So that a song is about you?
No.
Oh. Does it have any relation to you or your organization?
No. It sounds like something to do with me. And so CBC played it actually at the beginning of the interview, but it has nothing to do with me.
Okay.
Was that his orchestra?
I think so.
Okay.
So, Bob, why don't you talk a little bit about why you and your position of power allowed, say, the government systems of the planet to continue to, you know, play the game of ruling. In a sense, they're obsolete and are really, you know, out of the picture, and yet somehow or another we're still dealing with
them. And to destroy old-growth forests, for example.
Right. Well, you look at my chart from 1977 to 1990. When you read the script there, you'll see that holograms from 1977 to 1990, the hologram world is the visible figure amidst clashing universal bureaucracies complemented by mythic government lockdown, complements of the satellite surround. Myth is a whole culture or mixed corporate media in action, as I explained at the beginning of this memo. That's a quote from my memo to Prince Charles. All these government structures and all major media are visible and are hence holograms. And so the George Bush, none of these entities have any control. What has control is the electric tactility, and that is what's burning the forest down. And that's how we're going to save them if we bring in media ecology and control this tactility. Everything that you see on TV or around you is a hologram. It has no real substance in relation to the real presence, the real ground of electric tactility. Now, that's the point I forgot to mention about AIDS. One factor about the AIDS virus, which the scientists don't know yet, is that it really shifts. It shifts so rapidly, like tactility, like electric tactility, like your brain, that they don't know why it's mutating, how to gauge it, and how to categorize it just as a virus. They don't know what to do with it. That's an interesting thing about the AIDS disease, is that it represents, on the viral, on the molecular level, the very action of tactility.
But Caroline, was that your wife's name, Caroline?
No, Connie.
Connie has figured out the solution to this.
Well, she's
apparently
going to be PR for the people who have figured out the solution.
Oh, I get it. Okay. So what else?
So, Bob, now one of the things you say in your memo to Prince Charles in regard to the technofix belief filter in the face of raw perception, which humans can't take too much of without becoming very distracted by levels of mental anguish, wonder, or ecstasy. Now, is this kind of what's happening with these forests and AIDS and all of that? Is this a matter of people becoming distracted? What's going on here?
Yeah, well, that's part of the problem of the pink gang of the Secret Council of Ten. The pink faction, which control huge conglomerates of media wealth, and they can still hog the airwaves, not knowing that such big conglomerations are irrelevant under homeopathic conditions. That's why I will win. But at this point, you are being attacked by these huge dinosaurs implementing their agenda, illusory agenda. And one of the agendas is to bring back the nature worship, the idea of our bodies, the Adam and Eve Garden of Eden mythology, that you have bodies, you know, five senses, two legs, two arms, and all this stuff. That image of your body does not exist anymore. But Prince Charles can use that ecological image to run an obsolete agenda for preserving the nature and the ecology. So you've got to realize you have new lungs, new legs, all these new apparatus under technological electric environment conditions. You are wearing these things. You are a mixed corporate media environment as well as I am. But you're not aware of it. You're a motivated somnambulist. So to bring back, you know, the Brazilian summit, to emphasize preserving nature and the forest and the whole green agenda is a disservice as an image because it's not what we live in. And you can't get to the hidden causes if you just deal with the symptoms, which is the apparent loss of the old natural body. The natural body disappeared beginning with the telegraph. And we are in big trouble if you people don't understand this point. Because I've already saved the planet, but you guys don't know it's happened. And as long, in the ratio, it's like a mathematical function, in ratio to the lack of understanding of the slack we've achieved, will lead to more images and holograms of desolation.
Mm.
But we will get there to a ideal situation. But will you be there with me?
Did we ever establish Bob's connection to the Church of the Subgenius? I mean, did we get into that
yet?
We
talked about Dallas.
Yeah, a little bit, but I'm still really not clear on what the Church of the Subgenius is and your relationship to it.
Well, in simple terms, it's just one of the movements that I've inspired. Usually when people meet me personally, they get quite inspired. It's like ecstasy, the drug.
But you're not actually in it or say, the head pastor of the Church of the
Subgenius. No, that's just a spin-off. That's a side effect. That's just Reverend Stang's interpretation of his encounter with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there have been many other movements. Look at Eric Fischel, the artist in New York. He knew me in Nova Scotia. And he made a lot of money in the 80s in the art world. That was a spin-off. He celebrated my presence, my reality that he kicked off me. But the point is that all these movements are sort of holograms and side effects of the progressive navigation of my ship of state.
Now, with the Eric Fischel thing, now it seems that...
You know that name?
Yeah.
Okay, I got you.
Was that not... it seemed to have kind of that 60s tactility...
Right.
Sensibility remanifested. Is that what was the
That's
word?
Because he met me in Nova Scotia, where I was in the 60s and early 70s. And because that was his last contact with physical reality, once he had the slack and generating ecstasy of me, that's why he's still, like, he's replaying, like an afterimage, the last physical reference point he has. And so he refers to that
Nova Scotia environment.
What does social design look like?
Is it legit as a retrieval?
There were two questions there.
Well, one was what I'm asking Jeff here, what does Fischl's art consist of?
Let me see if I can. It's a little tough doing pictures over there.
Is it realism?
It's pictures
is it surrealism?
Of people in situations. It's narrative, and it has to do with. I remember a lot of things that young boys and older women kind of set up in this narrative display kind of space.
Yeah, there's the famous painting of the people on the yacht, nude, bathing with a dog walking through the yacht, out in this sort of swelling sea. You know that one?
Yeah.
And another one is Manhattoes. These people wearing masks, sort of a Mardi Gras.
A stylized
realism. So Jeff's question was: is this somehow a homeopathic retrieval?
No. The only homeopathic retrievals are the ones I implement, and they didn't start till 1990. I mean, Fischl's paintings are a retrieving. Let's say homeopathic retrievals are different from just plain retrievals. We've been running on retrievals for most of the 20th century.
Actually, my question is it a retrieval in the sense that? Say Elvis being a stamp. Now that was the Elvis thing you're doing is another thing to touch on, but or was it a spurious thing like this guy in Dallas? I mean, what's going
Fischl?
On?
Was Fischl?
Yeah.
He's a retrieval within the mythic stage of the Manhattan Art Gallery Mafia. They have to keep their mythic stage going. They had Warhol and they had the other movements, Joseph Beuys after that. So they had to wake up some loser, some guy who believed in New York City, the hologram of the Manhattan Art Gallery world. So they hooked up Eric Fischl as someone who would revitalize that ancient craft of painting, of using something to put on the walls of a visual space gallery. In other words, these people, the Pinks, have to keep their mythic stage, which are archetypes, going. They can't do it anymore, but they could do it up till 1990. So you've had these retrieval mythic stages up to this point.
What are the Manhattan Mafia trying to do with all this installation stuff? Is there an agenda there that I'm missing? What's going on here?
There's an agenda, but it's based on their understanding of what I'm doing, and it's usually filtered through much backward knowledge that they got from Hugh Kenner in his book, The Pound Era. You guys know about Hugh Kenner?
No.
Okay, anyway, he's a famous American critic who was a student of Marshall McLuhan, and he explained the basic ground of Pound, Wyndham Lewis, Eliot and Yates in the book Pound Era. Came out in the University of California, Berkeley Press in 1971. Most of the art gallery movements replay that. If you remember, Wyndham Lewis was popular in the early 80s. Installation art is an attempt to take the architectural part of painting, which was never understood. I mean, every artifact has an architecture. It creates a structure in our brains and our senses. So since painting can't do that via painting itself, then they show the ground of painting, of the mythic stage of painting, by showing the architectural installation in your brain of that hologram. That's what installation means.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. 1990...
So that is a perceptual reflex understanding of electric effects as they erode and make everybody able to see the ground. So even the artist can see the ground I'm talking about, and that's why they put it in the gallery. You see what I'm saying? This is an Esperanto effect of television. It makes everybody see the real nature of structuralism. And that is the television as a classroom. That's what it does to our senses. It teaches us a new thing. But what happens if we teach it too long? Okay, your point?
Do you ever watch Northern Exposure?
I try not to. That's a terrible, terrible show based on a pink version of David Lynch?
Sort of.
Of Twin Peaks?
Yeah, the character of Adam in that show.
Are
you familiar with him?
Which one is he, the radio guy?
No, he's the guy that lives out in the woods that is the chef. The
trees talk to him.
The trees talk to him.
He's like the log lady then.
Yeah, well, kind of.
Yeah.
Only
kinder and gentler.
More
diluted.
More subgenius kind of effect. He's kind of talks about the sort of things you do, which is, I wondered if you were in some way connected with that.
But he talks in the old natural artifact. He's out in nature, which means if any of these shows are spin-offs of real art like Twin Peaks, they put in a pink NBC format or whatever network has this show,
And they put it back into Prince Charles' structural hypnosis of nature, is where the wise man is.
I think they both started around right around the same time, and only this one lasted, unlike
right.
Twin Peaks.
No, Northern Exposure was ordered by me to go through the pink stratus to siphon off the Twin Peaks effect. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did implement that, but I wouldn't watch it.
Okay.
Just but I think that you can see the clues. Once you know my stuff, you see that the wise man in nature is an obsolete image, which the pinks can market, because you've had such shoddy education.
Hmm.
So what should we be watching, Bob?
You should be watching my liner notes and study them and going into the 10 holy offices right here. What are they? Frank Zappa, Cosmic Awareness, Marsh McLuhan, Herbert W. Armstrong, the old Worldwide Church of God. You'd be surprised what you can learn from him.
Oh, Garner Ted's dad.
Yeah.
From Pasadena, California.
Check out his booklets. There's stuff in there that will illuminate your view of the Illuminati.
The world tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay, well, hang on a second. We've got another call here. Hi, XYC, you're on the air.
Hello? Hi, this, I'm calling back again.
Good.
I'm still listening to you, and I've caught much more of the show.
So you're the one. Okay.
And I just find it appalling what you're saying. I mean, I don't know if...
Because I'm the donkey. New art is always ugly.
Huh.
I'm not doing my job.
I don't think that your art is very new. I think that it's an artifice that is quite old.
Okay,
actually.
Give me some antecedents. You don't even know what that word means. Blueberries.
I think that Jesus, as I said earlier, it was one... I think that you're playing God or something. I don't know if you're joking when you say that you're responsible for the
Northern Exposure
for the world or for Northern Exposure. I mean, is this a joke that I?
Do you know that you are in a godlike situation yourself? Do you realize the environment you're wearing? Do you realize you're wearing cars that you yourself are a king and a slave? You're a king in the sense you have at least, as Bucky Fuller tabulated 20 years ago, you have at least 400 energy slaves working for you. You have a whole telephone system. If you have a car, you have people bringing in oil and feeding it to you. You have food. Do you realize how many environments you have compared to someone 100 years ago? You, if someone from 1200 AD walked around here, you'd be a god. And so I'm a god, and I'm a...
I am willing to recognize my negligence. I'm not willing to claim that, you know, that I would have, you know, answers and to put myself in... singular, you know, position.
Well, you're not being responsible then, because you are in that position.
I think that part of what, you know, could possibly, what I would hope for is a more communalistic, you know, philosophical view or, you know, predictions for the world. And then just this, you know, this very egoistic...
Well, that's inevitable under the 90s.
And because you
is what
so.
I'm bringing in. Communalism is inevitable because... We live in the most communistic environment. Software, electric environments can't be bought, sold, or stolen. That's the Illuminati's problem for money, visual, space, media. They cannot buy, own, or steal the electric environment. And therefore, it's the most communistic thing that Marx ever imagined. And therefore, the natural social styles that will come out of that are communalism. Communalism. So I predict that. So I'm all for that, because it's inevitable.
Okay, well, we have to roll along here. Thanks for coming.
I got her just... Think.
You still there?
Awesome.
Who is there? Okay.
Well, we have 10 minutes left of Bob. Is it worth calling Bob back for one more dosage?
Well,
we could have a post Bob.
Yeah, let's have
discussion.
A post Bob forum.
Okay. All right. We have a question here. Hi, XYC. Well, they're not there either.
We may not have
but,
a forum.
Yeah, if you want to call up and Bob's temporarily not with us right now, but. If you'd like to call up at 962-8989 and have a post-Bob communion with us.
We can discuss Bob. I think discussing Bob is probably a good move after that. It's sort of like immersing your head in. It's almost like going to a disco or something. It just pounds and beats on your brain and pushes you into submission.
You could say that I didn't hit that button hard enough and that's why he's no longer here, but I think it's bigger and deeper than that. That
yeah,
he was somehow
he doesn't want
away.
To be here.
That Bob, in effect, hit the button.
Yeah, okay. Hi, XYC, you're on the air.
Hi, Bill, it's Dennis.
Hey, Dennis.
I didn't catch all but any but the last from about 7:30 on of that.
Oh, you don't know what you missed, man.
I really don't. I wonder if you could encapsulate exactly what was going on and explain to me why my BS detector was ringing bells the last 10 minutes.
Well,
here's an interpretation.
It's accurate.
Here's an interpretation. Maybe he's doing art. And maybe his art is about placing himself in that context and trying to analyze what he's tossing out at us at the same time as he tosses it out.
Or maybe everything he said was literally, factually true.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, you want to think about that for a while?
What in did he do that got him on the show in the first place?
Well, he is a radio commentary person, or does a show on a station in Toronto, and parts of his shows have been taped and recontextualized into a CD called Bob's Media Ecology, which is out on DOV Entertainment releases, and the band of sorts is called Producers for Bob. It was in rotation here at the station, say, I don't know, about 5 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, and we had an opportunity to get him on the show and thought he would be interesting.
Well, which he was. It was interesting, I'll grant that. I'm not sure I quite understood much of it, but...
It became lucid at moments.
It takes a while. It starts to sink in, but it still doesn't quite ever make sense.
I really, I don't think he's responsible for Northern Exposure or anything like that, but whatever. Yeah.
Okay, well, we have another call.
Interesting guest, anyway.
Okay, thanks for calling, Dennis.
Catch you later.
Bye. Hi, XYC, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was wondering if you had any of those addresses before I get information about Bob.
Yeah, what's that address,
Jeff? I have that right here. 2 Bloor Street, B-L-O-O-R, West, number 100-159, Toronto, Ontario, M4W3E2. That's the zip code.
You get that?
Yeah. And what's that? M4W3E2. That's the zip code.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Thanks for calling. Hi. XYC, you're on the air. Hello. Hi, XYC, you're on the air.
Hey, I have an interpretation of Bob.
All right, go for it.
Well, I kind of view Bob as like being a personification of the media, the monolith, and he's just like the media god. He's kind of taking that part, and the way he does it in a way that other critics, musical critics of the media, like to criticize the media or whatever in a way that, like Consolidated or Negative Land or one of those type bands do, you're inevitably going to come across as hypocritical in some way, because you have to work within a system to get your music out. Consolidated, signed to a major label, and blah blah blah, and the way he's doing it by kind of personifying the other, taking the other side, he kind of escapes that.
Right, he jumps over the barrier.
Let me interject here from his own words. I think the relevant subject here is the fusion/implosion of collective consciousness into one erogenous zone.
I mean, it was funny, like, listening to, it was interesting for me to hear, like, the callers call up and argue with him, because basically, it's like an argument against the big media thing, And he's just, he's laughing the whole way, because it's like you're talking to your television, basically. You're talking to, advertising, and everywhere you go, you can't escape.
Oh, golly, you mean he wasn't really serious?
No, but, well, some of the, I got the feeling that some people didn't, but I think he was serious. I mean, I think he was serious, but from a different perspective. I think some people, just think he's loony, but, he knows what he's doing,
It's art.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling.
Okay.
Bye.
We missed him.
We missed the other two callers.
Please call back.
All
we
of
miss you.
You.
We need you.
Here we
love
go.
You.
Hi, XYC.
Hi.
Getting near the end here.
All right.
What's up?
Hey, Bill. It's my dad.
Hi.
Am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
All right, great. Look, I just wanted to rebut something that Bob said earlier. I don't agree with his prediction on the American election at all. And I'd like to share a quote. I'm not sure quite of the derivation of this. It's Grendel or Grendel. I'm not sure that's philosopher or back to Beowulf. But if culture is a symbolic system and power is the ability to manipulate culture, then power is really the ability to manipulate symbols. And it goes on to say that's the purpose of all education. Now, I don't think that George Bush still has his abilities of manipulating those symbols like he did several years ago. I don't think the media is with him on this, and I think Bill Clinton's doing a much better job of it at this point. And I think that's what the real outcome of the election is going to boil down to. And I'd like to kind of hear Bob's comments on this.
Unfortunately, we've lost Bob.
Oh.
Bob hasn't been with us for
about
5 minutes.
We dropped
him off
the
phone. So
did you? I missed that.
We figured here at the close we might be better served by a post-Bob forum. Decompression or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
But perhaps we'll get him on the air again in 6 months after the election, and we can talk about it with him at that point, because, of course, we have the evidence on tape.
I think it is important to keep in mind that Bob himself did mention that there were other factions involved, and it may also be worth considering that he may have other motives in saying that, and he may not be straight up with us in saying that George Bush is going to win the election. He may be trying to motivate certain tendencies.
Oh, the reverse psychology attack, yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That's a thought.
I believe that since so many of our voters, our listeners, are likely to vote for George Bush, and he knows that he's trying to lull them into a sense of complacency so that they won't, because really, let's face it, Bill and Al have a much better media image. And plus, I think he's kind of, his falling out with Prince Charles and all, I think he's kind of, because Chuck's behind these guys, he's kind of on the outs with them.
Okay, we have to run.
Canadian is kind of schizophrenic.
Yeah, that's true.
He looks both ways. And, it doesn't quite make sense.
We got to go.
All right.
Thanks for calling. WXYC Chapel Hill coming up on 8 o'clock on Northern Hemisphere Live. I'm Bill Burton. That's Bob Boster. He's station manager of WXYC.
And that's Gary.
And that's Jeff. And he's on before me on Tuesday nights. And we've had a great time talking with producers for Bob's Bob.
Indeed. Who may, in some ways, be related to J.R. Bob Dobbs of Church of the Subgenius fame, as he purported, as well as may also have a lot to do with Bob of Twin Peaks, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, he definitely took the Twin Peaks thing to heart. And it is worth keeping in mind that the Subgenius stuff, he kind of indicated it did have to do with him, but it was spurious and not necessarily to be taken as gospel.
And one of us, if not all of us, will be back next Sunday at 6 for Northern Hemisphere Live. And I got a couple of ideas of what we're going to do. And hopefully, if you weren't interested in this show, you're not listening now, but it'll be a completely different type of thing. And 8 o'clock, WXYC, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned for it. Backyard Barbecue. Here's a little bit more producers for Bob stuff.